watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Venner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. In the 6 years since the events of September 11, 2001, we have seen the United States invade and occupy two countries, causing the deaths of a million people, making millions more maimed or homeless, poisoning the land with depleted uranium shells and other ordnance. We have seen people seized and held without trial and tortured in a network of gulags. We have seen laws passed allowing the government to monitor the communications and financial records of every person, invade our homes surreptitiously, even spy on what library books we take out. We have seen vast sums passed to preferred corporations for dubious projects, including the construction of a series of mass detention camps, all justified by the specter of 9/11 as an attack by a vast international terrorist conspiracy, Al-Qaeda. If not for that, these actions by the government would be understood and opposed by most, seen clearly for what they are, the establishment of dictatorship and empire under the control of an oligarchy. And we are all in grave danger of losing what freedom we have had under the cover of national security. The years since 9/11/2001 have also seen something else unprecedented: the rise of an international citizen movement to investigate and uncover the truth of what happened on that day. It has involved hundreds of people from all walks of life and across all political lines. Over the years, the movement has grown and been joined by people with considerable expertise who've lent their skills to this grassroots investigation. Their results sharply contradict those of the official investigations. One such group is the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, who focus their attention on the reason for the collapse of the three World Trade Center skyscrapers. Their conclusion? The buildings were brought down by explosives planted inside the buildings by persons with specialized expertise in controlled demolition. You are going to hear those proofs on the program this week in a presentation by architect Richard Gage, founder of the organization that now includes hundreds of architecture and engineering professionals. Unfortunately, you can't see the images that accompany the presentation on the radio, but you'll be able to follow up by going to their site, ae911truth.org. This particular talk was given on May 29, 2007, at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg.
I'm Richard Gage. I've been a practicing architect for 20 years. I became interested in these collapses after hearing the startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, on the radio in March of 2006. This has changed my life radically and launched my personal and professional quest for 9/11 truth, inspiring me to found the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 truth. It's extremely important that we know the truth about this event because it served as the pretext for two wars, the invasion of two countries in which almost a million people have already perished. It could happen again if we don't dedicate ourselves to finding out exactly what happened and why. These are the reasons we must peer into this painful part of our recent history, and to find out why. For instance, a 2006 poll by the New York Times CBS News revealed that 28% of Americans believe the Bush administration is lying, not just about Iraq, but about the events of 9/11. Of even greater concern, another poll by Scripps Howard, Ohio University, which found that a shocking 16% believe that the World Trade Center towers were brought down by controlled demolition with explosives. Unfortunately, my research of the last 12 months has confirmed that this is true. This is why we now have the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and why the 9/11 Truth movement itself is growing by millions every year. This afternoon, I'll present to you the very clear evidence that all three World Trade Center buildings, the high-rises, the iconic Twin Towers, and Building 7 were destroyed not by fire, as our government has told us, but by controlled demolition with explosives. I'm employed with a San Francisco Bay Area architecture firm, and like many other architects, I've designed numerous fireproofed steel frame buildings in my career. Most recently, these $3 and $10 million gymnasiums. And I've also been responsible for the day-to-day construction administration services for this $120 million new high school in San Ramon, California. I'm now working on quite a large project in Nevada with almost 2 million square feet of retail, parking structure, and steel-framed high-rise office space with over 10,000 tons of steel framing. But why have most of the architects that I have so far shown this presentation to joined AE911Truth.org in calling for a new independent investigation into these collapses on 9/11? And these engineers, you'll find all of them listed on our website, AE911Truth.org. Why is Time Magazine posting the story that 36% of Americans, and according to this other poll, believe that the administration is somehow complicit in the events of 9/11. Why have 100 well-known prominent Americans called for an independent probe into 9/11? 110 9/11 survivor and family members, 120 distinguished professors, all independently calling for a new investigation. Well, on 9/11, the American people were subjected to repeated shocking attacks, killing thousands of Americans. This has not happened since Pearl Harbor. The 5 years since 2001 has given us enough time to actually become objective. We have to step out from underneath the hypnotic trance that we were put in and gather the evidence that exposes the need to reevaluate these three World Trade Center high-rise collapses more objectively. Let's begin with an overview of the events of that morning so we can all get on the same page and take a look at the myth that developed.
September 11th, we learned that four passenger planes were hijacked and taken radically off course. Within an hour, two of the planes had flown into the enormous steel towers at the World Trade Center, creating fires and eventually toppling them. Dazed by the news, the American public soon believed the fires in the towers had burned so hot they caused the steel frames of the buildings to give way. A myth developed, fed by official sources through the media to a bewildered audience. Elements of the myth: the impact of the airplanes, gallons of burning jet fuel, steel melting, the buildings failing and suddenly imploding. In a mere 10 seconds, 110 stories hurtled earthward, pulverizing into dust. Right from the start, on the street itself, the official story was born.
Come out of nowhere and just scream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
The myth bled into the FEMA report and was echoed by the experts.
It was the combination of the impact load doing great damage to the building, followed by the fire that caused collapse.
Buildings are destroyed by a number of different forces, each having very different identifiable characteristics. For instance, fires affect buildings differently than controlled demolition and explosions. Fires, by their nature, tend to creep from place to place as they run out of fuel and find fresh fuel sources, leaving behind the burned-out area to cool. Now, when collapses do occur, and they have never in a high-rise office building, but, for instance, in wood buildings, they begin gradually and asymmetrically with large, visible, slow deformations. So remember this. Controlled demolition, we'll be taking a very close look at. When buildings topple, as in earthquakes like this, their mass tends to hold together. They don't pulverize to concrete. When buildings pancake, like this concrete building in an earthquake in Mexico, you tend to see a whole lot of pancakes on the bottom. We'll be looking for those pancakes when we get to the World Trade Center. And when buildings explode, we see flashes of light, visible streamers, lots and lots of explosive smoke and dust from pulverized concrete. These buildings fell over or collapsed. They tend to hang together. They don't pulverize to dust. They follow the path of least resistance. They don't fall straight down through themselves and turn to dust. Note the thick, dense billowing and enormous clouds with explosions, the shooting streamers, flashes of light. We'll be looking for these elements in all three World Trade Center high-rise collapses. This one on the lower right looks just like the Twin Towers, but it is not. It is an acknowledged explosion. We'll be comparing it to the Twin Towers. Let's focus on controlled demolition first. We have hundreds of examples of controlled demolition from all across the country from which to make our comparison to Building 7, because it's the most commonly used method to bring high-rise buildings down or demolish them. This is what a high-rise looks like when it's being demolished. Controlled demolitions can be engineered in many different ways. Normally, the purpose of a controlled demolition is to remove a structure while avoiding damage to adjacent structures and to do so economically. Typically, a tall building is demolished by placing thousands of cutter charges adjacent to columns and beams throughout the building and then detonating them in precise order, starting with the interior structure and then progressing outward and upward, synchronistically timed floor by floor. Destroying the interior columns allows the unsupported weight to pull the exterior inward, and destroying the building from the ground up allows the weight of the building to be harnessed to do much of the destruction. The result is an implosion, producing a vertical collapse at free fall speed into a consolidated rubble pile, which is broken up and ready for loading and shipment. This is what we see in all three of the World Trade Center high-rise buildings, and we'll take a close look. Now, this is a feat that only a handful of companies in the world can accomplish. And we're told that fire accomplished exactly this for the first time ever on 9/11. So what are the typical features of these controlled demolitions? Well, we have direct evidence of explosives, starting with sounds produced by explosions, rapid onset of destruction at the base, dust clouds, thick, billowing, and enormous, pulverized concrete. We have evidence of cutter charges. We have squibs or explosive cutter charges visible at the upper floors, demolition waves which remove column support, and a total collapse of the steel skeleton broken up and ready for shipment. Well, the result of all of this is a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint at work, because all columns are cut on a floor at once, synchronistically timed, resulting in a free fall speed of collapse. So we'll be comparing these features to Building 7 right away here, one by one. In addition, we have no typical characteristics of destruction by fire, the large, slow deformations, the creeping from place to place, the asymmetrical collapse of any structure that is destroyed by fire. But also, we have government documentation, which we'll be looking at in the case of Building 7, expert corroboration. Do controlled demolition experts say that this was a controlled demolition in the case of Building 7? Do we have foreknowledge of the collapse? Well, we always know when controlled demolitions, they're planned months in advance. Turns out in Building 7, we'll be finding foreknowledge. We have plenty of video documentation, all of which goes to support the hypothesis of controlled demolition, which turns out to be quite easy. So let's see if Building 7 has any of these features. Well, Building 7 is this tall 47-story skyscraper. How many of you have never heard of Building 7? Usually there's a whole bunch of people. Most of Americans have not. It's 47 stories. It was never hit by an airplane. It suffered some damage by the North Tower when it came down. And we'll see what happened to it. It's about a football field length away from the North Tower on the other side of Building 6. So here's the building in its pristine condition and then being pelted during the collapse of the North Tower. We'll be taking a look at all of this dust coming up in a moment. There are two or three fairly small fires, which is the only graphic evidence we have of fires in this building. There's smoke on the other side, and there's some dispute whether that was part of the Building 7 on fire or another building behind it. So we have two small fires, never hit by a plane, random damage from the Twin Towers. So let's march our way through the evidence here. Let's take a look at CBS video and listen to Dan Rather.
What you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
I want to refer your attention to the penthouse, which falls first, indicating core
what
column damage.
What you're seeing are high shots. Down.
Even Dan can pick up the obvious comparison to controlled demolition. Let's take a look at the NBC, and he never repeated that statement again, by the way. How does this happen? We have 24 core and 57 perimeter columns around this building. What could make all 81 of these columns fail simultaneously so that the building would collapse straight down, rapidly, symmetrically, in 6.5 seconds? How is that possible? Since the small fires and the damaged columns were only on one side, we're told by NIST and FEMA that the columns were damaged on this side, we're looking at the other side. Wouldn't we expect, for instance, if I broke my leg and I was going to fall toward the injury, that the building would do the same? No. The only way to do this is to take out all the columns at once. Now, this is an unusual building. It was built over a Con Edison substation, so there were some large spans spanning across the Con Edison, some trusses, cantilevered beams, and so forth, which would make it even more vulnerable if one of those supporting elements, a column or a truss, were to go down in a fire, which, remember, is not all the way around the building uniformly heating all those columns up at once. No, the building would fall over, favor one side. Let's take a look, finally, at the north side on West Street. Okay, now, what do you see in the upper right corner? Anybody? You see four explosions. We're going to be taking a close look at those. There's no fire engulfing this building. There is no fire alleged to have been on those upper floors either. Do we have sounds and sights of explosions in Building 7? Let's listen to an interview with this emergency worker.
We were watching the building, and because it was on fire, the bottom floors of the building were on fire, and we heard this sound. It sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was it looked like there was a shockwave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out, and it was horrifying. And then about a second later, the bottom floor caved out. And the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground. We were in shock, and then the noise caught up, and we felt
A shockwave ripping through the building, windows busting out, and then the building coming down. Craig Bartner of the New York Fire Department.
And the whole time you're hearing thum, 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 thum. So, I think I know an explosion when I hear it, you know. I was real close to Building 7 when it fell down. And running away from that sucked.
Incredible dust flow you're seeing right now, I want you to watch that very carefully. It's the only evidence we have of this massive pyroclastic, pulverized concrete and pyroclastic flow or heat-induced cauliflower-like expansion of the dust that we can see in Building 7, which is direct evidence of explosives.
That's one of the things that I live with all the time. And I don't know, but that didn't sound like just a building falling down to me while I was running away from it. There's a lot of eyewitness testimony down there hearing explosions. I didn't see any reason for that building to fall down the way it did. And a lot of guys should be saying the same thing.
This is why I do not argue with structural engineers about fires and what they can and can't do to steel. 90% of our evidence is not attacking the NIST report or the FEMA report, but showing the evidence of demolition, which is undeniable. Let's look at what fire does, though, to the building. Because the New York Times cited that experts said no building like it, a modern steel-framed high-rise, had ever collapsed due to fire. And fireproofing is intended to protect a building for 2 or 3 hours at the most. And even then, buildings have never collapsed in a fire of any duration, that is high-rise steel frame buildings. Even though, for instance, in these fires, numerous examples of which they've burned for well over 3 hours, in this case, Caracas, 17 hours over 26 floors, did the building collapse? No. Los Angeles, 3.5 hours over 5 floors, did the building collapse? No. Philadelphia, Meridian Plaza, 18 hours over eight floors. Did it collapse? No. New York, 50 stories high. It burned for 6 hours. None of these have collapsed. They're all in use today, having been refurbished. And yet, on 9/11, these two small fires on one side of Building 7 are responsible for bringing this building down in 6.5 seconds. After burning all afternoon, it came down at five in the afternoon. If there again were fires on the other side, we'd expect the building to fall away from us and favor its injury, not come straight down. Again, buildings that collapse follow the path of least resistance, not straight down through themselves. It's completely diametrically opposed to every principle of structural engineering, which is designed to resist the forces of gravity. That structural engineers can identify with. Am I right? Where's my structural engineer? Government documentation. Well, we had 4 reports. Association of American Society of Civil Engineers, FEMA, Silverstein, Weidlinger, and NIST. Throughout each one of these reports, we have the same cast of characters coming and going through them. We're told that they were volunteers. But these volunteers were not volunteers like you go down to the PTA and say, I'll help out. These were highly paid defense contractors who had ongoing contracts with the federal government at $10 million annually. So they had a huge stake in producing a report that favored their client. This is not unbiased. We have the FEMA report with only $600,000 of funding up until 2004 or 5. That was the only report we had from the government, and compare that funding to $40 million for the Clinton Bill Clinton affair with Monica. So we're not looking at something, a serious effort to get at the truth here. NIST finally got a three-year, $20 million project, which we're going to be taking a quick look at, which is an incredibly highly polished effort at concealing the truth. FEMA suggests, however, thank you very much, that the collapse of World Trade Center 7 had a small debris field as the facade was pulled downward, suggesting internal failure and implosion. Demolishing the building so that it collapses straight down into its own footprint requires such skill that only a handful of demolition companies in the world will attempt it. But thank God, fire did it on 9/11 without having to pay the demolition contractors. The specifics of the fires in World Trade Center 7 and how they caused the building to collapse remain unknown. This is after 3 years of study. We don't know what happened. Our best hypothesis, fire, then complete collapse, has only a low probability of occurrence. Further research, investigation, and analysis are needed to resolve this issue. Unfortunately, though, for investigators hoping to resolve the issue, the evidence had been completely destroyed by FEMA before it could be resolved. NIST had no steel from World Trade Center 7 to analyze. The 9/11 Commission, who was sworn to give us the complete, fullest possible account of the events surrounding 9/11, did not even mention the building in one page or one sentence of their 571-page report. Max Cleland, for this and other reasons, resigned from the commission, stating this is a national scandal. This investigation is compromised. Do we have a free fall speed of collapse? Well, here's a second-by-second drop of the building. With each passing second, the building drops faster. This indicates acceleration, which is due to gravity, and no resistance to that acceleration in the columns. You can plot the data on a graph of time over distance drop, and then you can lay a theoretical curve of free fall right over it, and it fits perfectly, indicating the columns were removed, which could only be done by explosives. Do we have expert corroboration? Well, here's the top European controlled demolition expert, Danny Juwenko. It starts from below. They've simply blown away the columns. This is a controlled demolition. A team of experts did this. This is professional work without a doubt. Okay? We have to deal with this. We can't go home and say, well, I'm not an expert in controlled demolition, so I don't really know what happened. This is why we have experts telling us what really happened. And indeed, just like in a court case, you'll have experts on every side of every issue. And you are the jury. You have to decide who's telling the truth and who's lying through their teeth. This is a responsibility of every one of us as citizens. In my opinion, the building, World Trade Center 7, was with great probability professionally demolished, says Hugo Bachmann, professor emeritus and former chairman of the Department of Structural Dynamics and Earthquake Engineering. Is there evidence of squibs in World Trade Center 7? Let's take a closer look in this side-by-side comparison of Building 7 to a known demolition. So we have Building 7 on the left and this known demolition on the right. Looks like they both come down in about 6 seconds. Building, look on the left, upper right corner, focusing in on those squibs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those are explosions. You have to deal with those explosions. This video is not fixed. Let's watch it again.
In ogni caso, non vi sono prove di demolizione controllata.
Before someone argues with you about what fire can or can't do to a building, you tell them, you watch this video, and you tell me what those puffs of smoke are. There's no fire up in that corner. The video is not touched up. This is evidence suitable for a court of law, right from network television. Okay? Did I make my point? Is there molten metal, and why, found at the bottom of the World Trade Center? Let's listen to Mark Loiseau.
Mark Loiseau, The president of Controlled Demolition Incorporated told the American Free Press that in the basements of the World Trade Center, where 47 central support columns connected to the bedrock, hotspots of literally molten steel were discovered more than a month after September 11th. These incredibly hot areas were found at the bottoms of the elevator shafts, down 7 basement levels. The molten steel was found 3, 4, and 5 weeks later, when the rubble was being removed. He said that molten steel was also found at World Trade Center 7. The highest temperature was in the east corner of the South Tower, where a temperature of 1,377 degrees Fahrenheit was recorded. The molten steel in the basement was more than double that temperature.
And the reason is because the molten steel is down in the basement. Those were surface temperatures that NASA was reading. Now, up here, B and A, that's Building 7. Those temperatures are 1,340 degrees on the surface. Any fire is probably at most about 1,300 to 1,400 degrees in the building. These are surface temperatures. Remember, that pile of building was about 7 or 8 stories tall. The surface temperature is coming through the pile 1,300 degrees. That's why below, the temperature must have been even much greater. There's plenty of evidence for molten metal. In fact, the fires get to be 1,200, 1,400, sometimes 1,800 degrees hydrocarbon fires. And by the way, that includes jet fuel fires. But molten metal, well, the salmon you see in this color is 1,500 degrees. The lemon color is 1,800 degrees, much hotter than a hydrocarbon fire can burn. Structural steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2,700 degrees. What produced this molten metal? NIST denies molten metal. FEMA denies that there's any molten metal. You're going to see more evidence of molten metal. Thermite produces molten metal at 4,500 degrees. What is thermite? We're going to find out. It's an incendiary cutting charge, which we found evidence at all three buildings we'll be seeing. This is previous molten metal, which is solidified. It's rust. It's not aluminum from any airplane. And aluminum doesn't rust. They call these meteorites. They found them all over the place, tons of this previously solidified.
Unusual artifacts to emerge from the rubble metal. Is this rock-like object that has come to be known as the meteorite.
This fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element.
Do we have foreknowledge of the collapse in Building 7? Well, what does Chief Nick Visconti say of the New York Fire Department? We're moving the command post over this way. That building's coming down. They knew it was coming down. Now, never before in history has a steel frame high-rise building come down due to fire. Firemen don't shriek from their responsibility to go into a high-rise and put it out. Our codes protect buildings quite well, and they've never come down before. But all of a sudden, on this day, they're saying the building's going to collapse. Indira Singh, EMT, by noon, 1 o'clock, they told us we had to move from that triage site up to Pace University a little farther away, because Building 7 was going to come down or being brought down. Is that what they said? Yeah. They said we're going to have to bring it down. Let's see what these police and these unusual workers have to say caught on this CNN tape. Now we're told that the building's going to blow up. It's not just coming down. So we're getting a little closer toward the truth. These policemen were obviously told. Not only that, BBC announces the collapse of Building 7 20 minutes before it happened. Here is Jane Stanley announcing. It says the 47-story Solomon Brothers building close to the World Trade Center has also collapsed. Well, there's the building right behind her. It has not collapsed. Do these people go by a script, or are they doing real-time reporting? What is the issue here? Well, they're being fed information. Who was in the building? Well, we have the CIA, the IRS, the Department of Defense, Securities and Exchange Commission, which, by the way, lost thousands of files related to hundreds of active cases against Wall Street companies such as Enron and WorldCom. Could Al-Qaeda have gotten into this building to plant the explosives? It's a simple question. It deserves a thoughtful answer. What have we shown in Building 7? Well, we've shown direct evidence of explosives because we have sights and sounds produced by explosions with the eyewitnesses you've seen, a rapid onset of the destruction at the base, the clap of thunder and the building coming down, those huge dust clouds billowing, enormous, from the pulverized concrete, the cutter charges or pools of molten iron from thermite, and we're going to be proving later that this is from thermite, squibs or explosive charges visible at the upper seven stories on the right side of Building 7. Deal with it. Demolition waves, removing the column support simultaneously all around the building, floor by floor, synchronistically timed, and a total collapse of the steel skeleton broken up and ready for shipment. All of that producing a straight-down symmetrical collapse into its own footprint, free-fall speed, virtually. No resistance from the columns. We have no typical characteristics of fire with large deformations creeping from place to place and slow deformations or asymmetrical collapse as we see in fires. We have government documentation which shows that they have no hypothesis that they value themselves, FEMA. We have expert corroboration from one controlled demolition expert, the top in Europe. We have foreknowledge of the collapse, that it's going to blow up, that they're moving the command center away, they're moving people back like seven blocks. And of course, we have plenty of video documentation, which you've seen, all of which goes to support the hypothesis of controlled demolition. Now, no building exhibiting all the characteristics of controlled demolition has never not been a controlled demolition. Let's take a look at the Twin Towers. Because the evidence, as great as it was for Building 7, is far greater for the Twin Towers. This was the crowning achievement of the international style, according to some. Moronic gigantism, according to others. And heartless modernism. However you feel about the buildings, let's take a close look at how they were destroyed. These buildings surpassed the tallest building in the world at the time, becoming 1,368 feet high with a 12.5-foot floor-to-floor height. There were structural innovations, which I'll show you, in this unique building, 208 feet square, which allowed a complete open plan, 60 feet span in this direction and 35 foot span in this direction. All high rises after this time followed this innovation. It was actually quite incredible, and it worked quite well. We'll take a close look at this structure. 11 million square feet. But almost immediately, we have difficulty renting the space. It took years to approach full occupancy with undesirable office space, gun-slit windows, low ceilings. It was subsidized financially, finally, by the tenancy of Governor Rockefeller, who put his entire state offices in there of 20,000 employees. The building was a disaster financially in the first decade. They had difficulties renting it. It required numerous renovations in the first decade as well. $200 million for asbestos removal, which became a hot issue almost immediately upon its construction. $800 million for rebuilding electrical communications and cooling systems. And galvanic corrosion was endemic, eating away at the connection between the structural steel and the aluminum cladding around the outside. The Port Authority denied permits for controlled demolition on several occasions due to the asbestos content, which would have been released into the atmosphere. Were they going to tear it down and rebuild it? It would have cost $5.6 billion to take it down to its structure with a scaffolding, somewhere up to $15 billion, some say. They were basically condemned structures. Nevertheless, 3 months prior to 9/11, we have a transfer of ownership with a 99-year lease to Larry Silverstein, transferring all of this real estate to him and his partners for $3.2 billion. Larry, I believe it's now $125 million of his own money he invested. And why would he do this if it was going to take $5.6 billion to $15 billion to repair it? Did he have some knowledge that he was going to be assisted in his demolition effort? The lease he signed had an all-important escape clause. If the buildings are struck by an act of terrorism, the new owner's obligations under the lease are void. This is extremely unusual, I am told. I'm not an expert in leases. Maybe some of you are. As a result, the owners are not required to make any payments under their lease. We'll be able to collect the insurance. And indeed, Silverstein is on his way to collecting $7 billion. He's got $4.6 billion already. The insurance companies made out as well. You might feel sorry for them under the circumstances. They raised their premiums over 2,000%. They came out smelling like a rose. In its place, the Freedom Tower is scheduled to rise to 1,776 square feet and will be a major profit center for Larry and the Port Authority as well. The Twin Towers were very, very unique at the time, with a dense grid of up to this time, these buildings had a dense grid of steel, as you can see, and concrete frames all the way through the building, every 30 feet or so. The Twin Towers were built as a tube structure with this very strong, dense mesh of steel surrounding the exterior, acting as a bearing wall and to resist all the lateral forces. Inside was the core, a dense grid of 47 immense steel box columns, 4-inch thick at the base and 2-inch thick at mid-height, narrowing to a 1/4-inch thick at the height at the top. Prefabricated floor assemblies with a 20-gauge steel deck over 29-inch deep steel web joists were topped with 4 inches of reinforced concrete, all of which was completely pulverized on 9/11. We'll be looking for evidence of these 110 pancakes at the bottom of the Twin Towers. The trusses were welded and bolted to the beams at the core and also at the spandrel panels at the perimeter bearing wall. So these were solidly constructed buildings. They were not designed to pancake, as you may have heard ludicrously mentioned by some, with 47 steel core columns and 240 perimeter columns. The perimeter structure was over-designed with a ratio of 20 to 1 because this was a new structure and they weren't taking any chances. The steel frame is a 100,000-ton heat sink. Any 1,400-degree fire, as was alleged, or 1,800-degree in some cases, alleged to have occurred near the core columns, would have been absorbed and dissipated through this incredible heat sink. There's no evidence for these temperatures whatsoever, even so. So you can see at the base, this incredible core column is almost solid steel, and they're rising up 47 of them here. And these are the metal decks and the perimeter columns with the spandrel panels, all capped by a hat truss, which serves to tie the perimeter and the core columns together as well as support the massive concrete antenna, which was 300 feet high. Let's take a look and see what the imperative was for jetliner proofing the building.
John Skilling and Les Robertson were the structural engineers who designed the streamlined steel frames at the Twin Towers in the 1960s. Because a wayward Army bomber flew into the Empire State Building in 1945, the towers were built with skyscraper crashes in mind.
The airplane we were envisioning was the largest airplane of its time, flying slowly and low, lost in the fog. We designed those to take the impact of a Boeing 707 hitting the building at any location.
The Boeing 707, by the way, has a kinetic energy equal to that of the 767, which hit the Twin Towers on 9/11, because the 707 flies much faster, 500 miles per hour versus 400 for the 767. I believe those figures are correct. So you can look at that calculation on Jim Hoffman's site, 911research.com. So what does John Skilling say? The World Trade Center structural engineer over Leslie Robertson. The biggest problem would be the fact that all the fuel would dump into the building. And if that happened, there'd be a fire. So this was taken into account by the words from John Skilling's mouth himself. Now, both FEMA and NIST acknowledge that the impacts virtually did nothing to the structural integrity of the building. They stood for 56 minutes and 102 minutes, respectively, after their initial impacts. And the building swayed. They came to a stop. The forces were routed around the impact. And FEMA, of course, says, well, what happened was the fireproofing was knocked off. That made the steel vulnerable to the intense fires. We'll be taking a look at that allegation. Let's look at the drawings that we get from PBS Nova and FEMA. Quite deceptive illustrations. In this case, we see a bunch of pancakes stacked up, ready to fall down with no core columns. There's this effort to deny that there was a core in these buildings by the 9/11 Commission itself, which said the core was a hollow steel shaft, by these, which really trying to sell something to the American people. Reminds me of some of the mortgage advertisements I get in my mail with these low interest rates and low payments. It's a total deception. In the case of the trusses, they're not shown with their cross bridging. They're not shown with the steel decking, which is topped with 4 inches of concrete, all of which goes to support it. We don't see a core in the case of this drawing until you read the fine print and realize that, oh yeah, one's a core column and one's a perimeter column, and we're talking about the span between them. And in this drawing on the upper left here, you see a fairly representative example of how the columns in the core align fairly orthogonally in line and are represented according to their scale. But in the FEMA and NIST drawings, you see them almost the scale of toothpicks, or about the same size as the perimeter columns, which are 14 inch by 14 inch square. Remember, these columns are, corner columns are 52 inches by 22 inches. And the other ones, not in the corner, are 30 inches by 16 inches, completely shown out of scale here and randomly placed instead of orthogonal. So there's a whole distortion effort. The drawings for the World Trade Center were recently leaked from somebody in the world, in a Silverstein-Weidlinger report. We have them now on our site, ae911truth.org. You can download them. You can look at all the floors. And here's an example of the 66th floor, which shows the correct columns here. This is the core that I've zoomed in on now. Core columns are very large and orthogonally arranged, just like that diagram you saw earlier. So What the theory is that the first theory is the pancaking theory, where the truss became disconnected from the exterior columns one by one and zippered all the way around the building, causing this pancake collapse. The next theory that NIST came up with after they threw that one out is that, no, they blame the persistence of these connections between the truss and the exterior columns, because as the truss heated up from the fire, it sagged up to 42 inches, we're told, which turns out to be a crock, and pulled in the perimeter columns, causing them to buckle and fail. Either way, it doesn't add up at all, and it ignores all of the demolition evidence that you're about to see. Now, when we go to show the demolition for the Twin Towers, it's out of the range of our experience, because controlled demolitions typically have not been from the top down, so we don't have a frame of reference from which to view this. So if somebody was going to blow up the World Trade Center and blame it on jet plane impacts, you'd start at the location of the jet impact and work your way downward. And indeed, that's what we see. Let's take a look and compare this to a typical controlled demolition, because there are some key differences. We have a rapid onset of destruction, but not at the base up at the location of the jet impacts. We have a straight down symmetrical collapse, not into its own footprint, but blown outside its own footprint. We'll take a close look. And all the columns are cut on a floor at once. They're not so much cut as cut and then blown laterally. We're going to take a close look at what that means. Otherwise, there are very similar features. Let's start with the sights and sounds produced by explosions. This is Jim Hoffman.
The way I describe what happened to the towers is that they were, I don't think you can get around calling these explosions. They exploded into these clouds of dust with, you know, steel hurling in all directions. And these explosions became 500 feet in diameter by the time they reached the ground, actually more like 800 feet in diameter. But the reason I think people don't think of them as explosions is because they occurred over a period of 15 seconds in either case. So there wasn't a particularly, like, normally people think of an explosion as you hear a loud crack, a bang, and then it's just that one event. But if you have, in the case of a demolition where you might have thousands of explosions that are all blending in, then you get one huge explosive event, but you don't hear any distinct explosions that's so much above the roar of it. The thing sounded like sort of like an ocean wave, just this incredibly loud roar, but incredibly explosive. The tops, I described them as mushrooming, because they blew out so far.
Well, we have lots of witnesses, because the New York Times sued the city of New York and gained access by a state court of appeals to the oral histories, which the city of New York was denying any access to, and you'll see why. There's over 118 quotes. I won't read them all to you. "We felt the ground shake. You could see the towers sway, and then it just came down. The ground shook, then it came down. All of a sudden, the ground just started shaking. I thought I heard an explosion. It actually shook my bones. Shortly before the first tower came down, I remember feeling the ground shaking. I heard a terrible noise, and then debris just started flying everywhere. Heard the noise, and then debris started flying everywhere." Let's take a look and listen to what the news reporters say initially, and then you never hear again after the first day.
"We've heard reports of secondary explosions after the aircraft impacted.
The entire building has just collapsed, as if a demolition team set off. When you see the old demolitions of these old buildings, it pulled it down on itself."
Anybody who's ever watched a building being demolished on purpose knows that if you're going to do this, you have to get at the under infrastructure of a building and bring it down.
Like, it sounded like gunfire, you know, bang, 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 and then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
"At 10:30, I tried to leave the building, but as soon as I got outside, I heard a second explosion, and another rumble, and more smoke, and more dust. I ran inside the buildings, the chandelier shook, and again, black smoke filled the air. Within another 5 minutes, we were covered again with more silt and more dust. And then a fire marshal came in and said we had to leave, because if there was a third explosion, this building might not last."
"There was a heavy-duty explosion.
Some of those secondary explosions and then the subsequent collapses."
The full impact was seen in the moment in time. My colleague Stephen Evans, who was in the Trade Center and was interviewed just after the first explosion.
There was another big, big explosion in the other tower. Flames coming out in this billowing gray smoke."
How many of you heard about explosions in the World Trade Center before you became aware of these recently from 9/11 Truth Movement? 1, 2, 3, 4. So there were some reports that got out.
You're listening to a presentation, How the Towers Fell, by architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. We continue with the conclusion of Richard Gage's presentation.
What did the New York Fire Department guys say?
What did we do?
We made it outside. We made it about a block.
We made it at least two blocks, and we started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, it was if they had detonated. Detonated. If they were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down. I was watching it and running.
Just ran up west.
And then you just sort of this cloud of shit chasing you down.
Couldn't outrun it.
West Street.
Couldn't outrun it.
So what'd you do? I jumped behind a battalion car. I hit under the car. It was swinging and died.
He saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. It seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings, it seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt, all these explosions. I saw low-level flashes. Somewhere around the middle of the World Trade Center, there was this orange and red flash coming out. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was, crackling, explosive, a wall. With each popping sound, it was initially an orange and then a red flash coming out of the building. Pop, pop, pop. That's exactly what, because I thought that's what it was, an explosion. Suddenly, there was another loud boom at the upper floors, and then there was a series of smaller explosions which appeared to go completely around the building at the upper floors, and another loud, earth-shattering blast with a large fireball which blew out more debris. Flash, flash, flash. Then it looked like the building came down. Let's see what all these flashes and these sounds of explosions are from.
Buildings as they fall into their footprint. The tremendous billowing clouds of dust. Now let's look at the collapse of the Twin Towers. We are seeing explosions rather than implosions, a first in demolition history. A sequenced rumble becomes a roar as debris is thrown outward. The damage is not contained. Even the windows are blown from neighborhood buildings. What kind of energy enabled this? Would fire hurl metal and concrete sideways into the air? Here, a 600,000-pound chunk of steel, twice the weight of a Boeing airliner, was flung 400 feet, wedging itself deep into Three World Financial Center on Vesey Street. A FEMA photographer taking pictures of Ground Zero wondered why so many steel beams were jutting from neighborhood buildings. What shot pieces of the towers all the way across the street? In April 2006, New Yorkers were distressed to learn that bone fragments, human remains from 9/11, had been found on the roof of the nearby Deutsche Bank building.
And how, in God's name, did those fragments get there?
It surprised me that there was still bone fragments or human remains that had not been discovered.
How is it possible that after 5 years they're finally looking on the rooftops of the Deutsche building? I mean, that's crazy.
And bone fragments less than a centimeter long. How could they be so small?